yesteryear.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Lisa Maxwell for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading from Good Old Days magazine. To start off our first program for the new year, I'm going to share with you a story about building snowmen, and it's titled Snowmen of Yore. His talent could make any artist jealous, and this was submitted by Karen Hughes. While the snow falls steadily outside my window, I remember the Missouri snows of my childhood. Not all of them were meant for building snowmen, works of art, but we usually had at least one snow a year that fit the bill. We kids could hardly wait to get outside and start the rolling process. My dad was the ultimate snowman builder. He was artistic, and during the winters, he produced his artwork with snow. We kids helped. When the snow flew, we just hoped that it would stick around until his day off. While we waited for Dad, we made traditional snowmen. We rolled three balls of various sizes, lifted them one atop the other, and dressed our ordinary snow people in old winter gear from our closets. Most were planted in the backyard. One special snowman would take center stage out front where everyone could see him. When the great snowman building day arrived, my sisters and I hardly had time to eat breakfast. We bundled up and stuffed an extra pair of gloves into our pockets. Building a masterpiece is wet, time-consuming work. Outside, Dad gave each of us our special jobs. Since I was the oldest, I was in charge of piling up the snow. My younger sisters rolled snow to me. Dad used the shovel to get more snow from the backyard to add to my pile. We needed a huge base for our snow sculpture. My patriotic father always directed the creation of a gigantic bust of either George Washington or Abraham Lincoln. It varied from year to year, but we would have one or the other of our nation's beloved presidents standing guard in our front yard for as long as the weather allowed. We made a pile of snow about 5 feet tall that would represent the shoulders and chest of our chosen icon. Then the creative part began. Dad needed a ladder to deposit a medium-sized glob of snow atop the presidential shoulders. While he sculpted the head, we girls busied ourselves smoothing the base and finding the right materials for coats, buttons, and collar. We used charcoal to color the lapels of the jacket. After Dad had the face shaped, he took the charcoal and colored the eyebrows, lips, and beard for Lincoln. Two pieces of charcoal became the eyes. Our renditions of Presidents Washington and Lincoln never compare to the work of their portrait painters, Stuart and Hicks. But to us and to the people driving down our street, there was no doubt who was being honored. Something as beautiful and majestic as a 7-foot-tall representation of Abraham Lincoln or George Washington that took hours to build could last until spring. As long as the temperature stayed well below freezing, even a dose of sunshine didn't threaten our snow presidents. But as warmer temperatures appeared, something had to be done to keep the president in office. Late at night, Dad unrolled the hose, turned the water to the garage spigot back on for a few minutes, and quickly doused our snowman with cold water. Overnight, it froze solid, and it stood in presidential splendor for months after that. One year, George Washington was situated in front of a 20-foot-long, 8-foot-wide, and 6-foot-tall igloo tunnel. Neither one melted completely until May. We were so proud. I'm going to stay with a winter theme for our next article, and this is submitted by Douglas Clark, and it's titled Skating on Thin Ice. In the winter of 1954, I was 12 years old and my brother Buddy Earl was 11. There wasn't an ice skating rink in the Smoky Mountains of East Tennessee, but we did have a humongous cow pond. In a hard winter, the pond froze solid. But that winter was mild, and in a mild winter, you took your chances on the ice splintering apart. We were not permitted to swim in the cow pond during summer. But come winter, it was a perfect place to play on the ice. Having only winter boots as skates, my brother and I were forced to improvise. Moving across ice wearing boots was not the safest thing to do. With any humps or cracks in the ice, we fell and traveled across the pond spread eagle. I'm tired of spending most of my time scooting across the ice face down. We have to think of something to put on our boots. Just don't say lard again. We tried that, said Buddy Earl. It was true. We had tried lard, axle grease, and even motor oil. Nothing helped. Boots were made for walking on ice, not skating. Buddy Earl was the thinker, and I was the doer. More often than not, when we put our heads together, it was a disaster. Buddy Earl crossed his arms and smiled. That's when I knew our train was about to jump the tracks. I got it. You can make skates to fit on our boots from pieces of wood. How in the world did you come up with that idea? I asked. All I can build are birdhouses. When my younger brother smiled again, I knew we were done for. Hans Brinker, in the story Silver Skates, had handmade wooden skates, and he won the race. You just hit the nail on the head, I replied. It's only a story someone made up. Besides, how would we fix the wood to our boots? Buddy Earl pointed at my boots. Glue or small nails? Glue would work, but nails would be fast and hold better. Just what kind of glue is going to hold wood to rubber? I asked. Buddy Earl gave me his know-it-all grin. The white glue we use in school. Don't you remember? The kind that some kids eat. Now, I had a way out of this. That white glue is for paper and nothing else. It just wouldn't work. My brother wasn't going to give up. Then it's nails. There's a can full of small nails in the barn. They are just what the doctor ordered. Knowing there wasn't a way out, I caved in. Okay, I'll go along with this only if I do the wood finding and the nailing. The wood and nails were easy to find. Nailing the wood to the boots was a little tricky. When I finished, I handed my brother his boots. Hold on a minute. This ain't going to work. You have to bend the nails over. They are just spikes. Now our train derailed and went over a cliff. If I bend the nails over, we might tear up the soles, removing the wood. Betty Earl handed me his boots. You are just a worry wart. If you nailed something on, you can nail it off. Dad did have a claw hammer and a pair of pliers. Removing the wood would be a breeze. So I thought. The ice sure looks thin. Maybe we should wait for a cold spell, I said. There you go again, raining on our parade. I'll go first if you're afraid. Go ahead and be my guest. Just remember, if the ice breaks and you fall through, don't call on me to pull you out. As my brother eased out onto the ice, I heard a light cracking sound. I crossed my fingers. Nothing happened. The ice seemed thick enough to skate on. Buddy Earl motioned for me to join him. Come on out. This ice could hold up an elephant. As I stepped out onto the ice, there was another cracking sound. Urged on by my brother, I moved farther out on the pond. Suddenly, I slipped on the ice and fell. Hold on, Buddy shouted. Don't come over here, I yelled. The ice won't hold both of us. Too late. My brother came close and the ice fell apart like an old rag doll. Both of us went into the icy water. We were wet and cold, and if we couldn't remove the wood, our boots were ruined. The ice was broken enough to make it easy to reach the edge of the pond. Then we had to remove the wood from our boots, go to the house, and dry out. The more I used the hammer and pliers, twisting the nails, the more damage I did to the boots. Soon the edges of the boots were torn to shreds. Betty Earle held up one of his boots. "You sure made a mess of this. What are we going to do now?" It didn't take me long to answer. The next circus coming through Knoxville will have me going with it. "That's never going to happen. Now what's your second plan?" "Just confess everything to Dad and beg forgiveness." Buddy Earle looked at his boot again. "How long is it before another circus comes through?" Needless to say, our father was not impressed with our ingenuity. "I don't know what I am going to do with you two. I just don't know what to say." Buddy Earle quickly threw gasoline on the fire. "Does the word forgiveness come to mind?" Although our father had a few choice words to say, forgiveness was not one of them. In the end, everything worked out almost fine. We used nails to attach the soles back to our boots. When we walked the school halls, everyone thought we had heel taps on our boots. And the next story I want to share with you is titled Winter Fun Despite Rationing. And this was submitted by Ruth Smith. World War II presented many challenges for the average homeowner, including the use of the family car. As Dad didn't have an essential war-related job, he was limited to an A ration card for gasoline for the shiny Essex sedan that sat in our garage. Recreational use was strictly limited. He took the streetcar to work in downtown Milwaukee, while he and his brother Rudy saved their A stamps for an occasional family outing. It had been a hard winter, but occasionally there would be a trek from Milwaukee to Green Lake, Wisconsin, for a weekend visit to old friends, Gladys and Frankie. Six of us would pile into the Essex. Mom, Aunt Bert, and I sat in the rear seat. My friend Mary Ann, the smallest, sat in the front between Dad and Uncle Rudy. She endured the stick shift that banged into her knees. Mom would sputter about how unhealthy it was to have hot air blasting from the newfangled heater under the dashboard. The only thing that the heater did was fry Uncle Rudy's right leg. It was the one warm spot in the car. The three of us in the back seat were squashed together with a thick blanket over our legs. Huge mounds of snow outlined the curbs, but roads were clear. The road wound through tiny villages of the Kettle Moraine countryside. Our friend's home was perched on the frozen shores of Green Lake. Once we were indoors, delicious smells of dinner cooking welcomed us. Mary Ann and I immediately grabbed our skates to try out the huge area of ice Frankie had cleared on the lake. After circling, spinning, and racing, we trudged up the hill for dinner. In the days of meat rationing, Gladys had thinned her flock, and heaping platters of chicken with all the trimmings were waiting and soon disappeared. A roaring fire in the fireplace kept everyone toasty, while the Heritage Monopoly game was fought in the evening. Uncle Rudy was the king of the real estate world. The wind howled all night long, and the next morning there was a new layer of snow. After a hearty breakfast, the men cut wood for the evening's fire while Mary Ann and I found an old, fallen-down shed on the property. It held a rickety toboggan. We thought it would be fun to try it out. However, we needed more manpower, and we hoped to coax the ladies to join in the fun. Gladys, who had never really grown up, shamed Mom and Aunt Bert into joining us on the hill. Their combined weight would help the unwieldy toboggan keep on track and go even faster. Truthfully, the ladies deserved a lot of credit. While Gladys was a heavy Mackinaw, the city girls' gear consisted of dress coats, babushkas, rayon stockings, and galoshes. Our combined weight propelled the craft, and it took on a life of its own. Like a volcano that had exploded, snow was thrown up all around and over us as we flew into a small hill of white. The dubious toboggan fell apart, and we all tumbled helter-skelter into the snow. Frosty the Snowman had found friends. Fortunately, Gladys laughed, and the happy sound caught on with the rest of us. And if you dream of being someplace warm during these cold winter months, this story is for you. Frances Smith has written this story, and it's entitled, The Winter Winds Led Us South. Daddy was determined we were going to escape from the blustering sub-zero winds blowing down from Lake Erie to Fremont, Ohio, during the winter of 1965. Frances, when's your last day before holiday break? Daddy asked when I got home from school. Why? I wondered. An hour later, after hanging up the phone, he announced to Mama and me, we're all set. We're going to Florida by choo-choo. Smiling and in a jovial mood, he joked, I can enjoy a drink under a palm tree as much as under a Christmas tree. At 2 a.m. in Crestline, Ohio, we stood in drifting snow on a platform waiting for our magic carpet to pull into the station. When it groaned to a stop, a porter snatched our suitcases and led us to our roomettes. These were compact, with two chairs that turned into a bed, a berth that pulled down from above, plus a funny little sink and a private toilet. The porter had the beds in our roomettes already made up. Feeling the soothing clickety-clack under my bed, I quickly fell asleep. In the morning, heading to the dining car, I passed by other passengers in plush seats with starched linens on their headrest, sprawled out and snoring in the passenger cars. In the dining car, even with trains swaying, our waiter didn't spill a drop of coffee on the white tablecloth. I liked not being stuck in my seat. I went for pretzels in the tavern lounge car and for water in a paper cone from the cooler. I walked from car to car and still saw the scenery, which was mostly backyards. Backyards are more interesting than front yards. That's where life happens. The next morning, when I walked to the dining car, it was warm, and I smelled honey. Out the window were miles of orange groves. After rumbling into the station in Jacksonville, Florida, we disembarked. We rented a Ford and headed south. Stops at Parrot Jungle and Monkey Jungle were more entertaining for a teenager than Orchid Jungle. The parrots who talked at Parrot Jungle were funny and engaging. How cool it would be to own a yellow-naped Amazon, like a pirate. Monkey Jungle, where the humans are caged and the monkeys run wild, was a blast. The chimpanzees, dressed in shorts and sundresses, drove kitty cars and rode tricycles. The chimps also had their own rock band with a talented guitar player. We had reservations at Rutgers Beach Motel and Pool on Key Colony Beach in Marathon Shores. There were 60 rooms on the ocean beach along with a fishing pier. Our room was on the third floor facing the parking lot. An ocean view room on the bottom floor cost three times as much as ours. We consoled ourselves. We're only going to be in here to sleep. Among the swaying palm trees were umbrella tables and cabanas with comfortable cushions. Next to the shuffleboard court was a surf shop with displays of crocodile teeth necklaces, seashell bracelets, and swimwear. I was especially drawn to the colorful bikinis. Unfortunately, buying a teeny-weeny one would have made Dad grit his teeth, and I wouldn't have been allowed to wear it. So I settled on a modest two-piece in clashing colors, hot pink with red daisies. At the cash register, there were two fish bowls. One held tanning eye shields. I already had a free pair I got when I bought suntan lotion. In another fish bowl were white plastic nose guards. They snapped around the bridge of sunglasses and eye shields. My nose was sunburned, so I bought one. Each afternoon around 4 p.m., we left the beach to watch the charter fishing boats come in with their catch of the day. Some skippers were inspired to use wordplay to name their boats, like Vitamin C and Seize the Moment. A fisherman was lucky if he caught something thrilling like a shark, sawfish, or parrotfish. The fish were displayed and the sportsmen posed for snapshots. Meanwhile, the captains cleaned and filleted the fish while seagulls screeched, pleading for fishtails. Mama was a homebody and felt homesick. Packed in her suitcase was a string of our Christmas lights. She strung them around the lampshade on the lamp in our room, explaining, "This will make it feel more like Christmas." She knew what I was thinking and let me know in a hurry, "Don't expect presents under the lampshade. This trip is your Christmas present, Frances Ann." By thumbing through the yellow pages, we found a church to attend on Christmas. It was decorated with Bird of Paradise flowers, which I had never seen before. Afterward, at Colony House by the Sea, we helped ourselves to eggnog from a punch bowl. Although stuffed with turkey and dressing, we splurged and ordered desserts. We spent the afternoon at our favorite place, the beach. Daddy wore the same red plaid swimming trunks he'd worn for the past 10 years. He contently sat with an icy tropical drink in his hand under a real palm tree instead of our artificial Christmas tree. The only thing missing from this idyllic scene were a scarlet macaw or two and a monkey band. Douglas Maxson submits our next story, which is titled Sledding the Way It Was Meant to Be. A used candle slid across the metal runners of an American Flyer sled. The paraffin white slivers coated the steel arches, leaving a slippery base. When in contact with cold, packed snow, the sled's performance was taken to the next level, super fast. I was ready to take this wooden, red-striped demon to one of my favorite sledding places, Elephant Hill. It was located about a quarter mile from my house, a nice walk through a wooded area directly behind the high school. I don't know the story behind its name. It should have been named Camelback Hill, as it had a large dip in the middle. This elevated landscape ruined many sleds. Almost every week I replaced wooden slats from after going airborne 5 feet above the surface and then landing like a rock. The view from the top of the hill was a scenario of 5 trails. 4 of them led sliders around the middle hump from both sides. Some chose to take those routes for fear they would damage their sleds. On the downside, if you lost control, the trees lining either side could make your sled meet its maker. The middle trail narrowed to a sled's width at the base of the hill past the jump. Maintaining control was difficult if you chose the route over the hump. If the jump didn't get you, the trees would. Lying belly down on a sled was a popular position, using your hands to control the direction. Most sledders preferred sitting and controlling it with their feet when going over the large hump. After reaching the bottom, a sledder would travel for 50 feet to another small hill. At that point, the trail took a slight turn to the left for around 70 feet to a small creek that was usually frozen over. If you prepared your sled for speed, your chances of reaching the creek were great. The traditional sled was not the only form of fun on the snow. Car hoods, those from the 50s with that V shape, were the best on snow. They could accommodate as many as 5 kids. The downside was that the metal could have sharp edges, and maintaining any kind of control was nearly impossible. When the hood hit the large dip in the middle, it went airborne, and the landing was rough and ragged. Sometimes it would spin around and point toward the open side, where it would dig into the snow that would pile up on you and possibly flip over. My father also got the sledding bug. He built his own version of a bobsled from materials around the house. 2 identical sleds were paired together with a 2x10 oak board. He attached a car steering wheel to the front sled to control its direction. It didn't provide a sharp turning radius, but it was enough to keep it on course. Dad's chosen sledding hill was the one leading down to the river dam. It was straight and had a good slope for speed. The downside of Dad's sled was that it was extremely heavy. Because of its length, it could hold 5 or 6 kids, making it easier to get help pulling it back up the hill. Besides Elephant Hill, there was another favorite sledding challenge not too far away. We called it Tiger Ridge. It wasn't used much because of its difficult, narrow trail that was heavily lined with trees on both sides. Keeping a sled on that trail without hitting any trees took careful precision. The sled's runners had better be straight and easy to maneuver. Round saucers and cardboard were also used for sleds. One material I saw that ended up being a surprise failure was an old windshield that a young girl tried on snow. The hill she slid on was next to the city's dump. That's where she found the used windshield. Early windshields were not constructed of shatterproof glass, and as she slid down the hill, the windshield exploded after hitting a bump. The shattered pieces flew everywhere. She was fortunate she wasn't severely hurt. As it turned out, she was more frightened than anything. Sledding in the 1950s and 60s proved to be a fun all-day sport for us post-war kids. We stayed on the hill until almost dark. I remember coming home with my black buckle boots frozen so badly that my mother had to help me unthaw them to get them off. But it was worth it. That was sledding the way it was meant to be. And here's a little flashback fun piece for you. The song Frosty the Snowman was written by West Virginian Walter Jack Rollins and Steve Nelson and was first recorded in 1950 by Gene Autry. The story was published in the Little Golden Book series shortly afterward. A TV special based on the song was broadcast in 1969, and Jimmy Durante narrated the cartoon. And lastly, I want to share with you, here are some games that were popular in the 1960s. The Game of Life, Hi-Ho Cheerio, Mousetrap, Mystery Date, Trouble, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, Operation, Twister, Battleship, Strat-O-Matic Football, and Ants in the Pants. Did you ever have any of these games when you were young? I did. I had Mystery Date, and I loved it. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Good Old Days, and I hope you've enjoyed these winter stories. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Lisa Maxwell for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Good Old Days is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. And that number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.
Howdy, folks.
Yes, it is your old friend Singin' Sam. So let's just settle back and reminisce a bit. What do you say, huh?